Yeah, hello everybody out there. Welcome back, or welcome completely new, to the Wellenlänge Surf Podcast. Our second English challenge today. Woo-ha! Fabi and me, we were both pretty excited about it. Our guest today is Mehdi El Fadil. He's a developer and producer of the surf forecast app Gonna Surf that specifies on the Canary Islands. We got his contact from a friend of us that was here in an interview before. Best regards to Lina from Work Less, Play More, coaching startup in Fuerteventura. So with Mehdi, we talk first a little bit about forecasting in general. Then we talk about his personal surfing background. And then we get a little bit more into depths. What about all these numbers and figures come from that we look at before we go surfing and we rely on, as well as about local differences between surfing and even weather forecast apps in different countries and areas. Actually, by the end of the interview, when I did the cutting, I realized, okay, there are some information missing. So my advice, keep listening. By the end, there is an extra section that I actually put some more questions up to Mehdi via WhatsApp. So the last 9 minutes, we actually talked via voice messages on WhatsApp. And I just put this behind here to fill these gaps that there are still in all the knowledge that he gave us already. I hope you enjoy our conversation. As I said, quite a challenge for us in English. I would confidently say we managed quite well and we definitely became better after a while of talking. So maybe have some patience with us. Enjoy our talk and thanks for your time. So, all right, second talk in English, Fabi. Are you ready to rock or to take off?
I think I'm not ready, but we will do this.
Yeah, we say hello to Mehdi and Fuerteventura again. When we talk in English, we always talk to with Fuerteventura so far.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks to Lina also that she recommended you as a guest with a very interesting topic, the forecast, what we want to do today. But first of all, I would like to know, you lived 13 years in Belgium, and tell me why you changed the world famous Northern Sea beach breaks against like these crappy point breaks on Fuerte, eh?
Well, you said it already, yeah? Yeah, I was just fed up of only surfing during vacations, during limited time. And like many people, I guess the COVID crisis was a trigger to push me to relocate and start a new life. So I knew already Fuerteventura from my surf holidays. And I first came here to run away from a second lockdown in winter in Brussels.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And once here, I felt, okay, I can surf every day or almost every day. Life is good here. Why go back north up there? I loved my life in Brussels, but had more balance here, I felt.
Okay, so you lived in Brussels, so you have to you had to drive like 1.5 hour to surf in Belgium? Or?
Yeah, I barely ever surfed there, actually.
Ah, okay.
I was more waiting for time to have vacations and going to Portugal or to the Canary Islands or somewhere else.
Yeah. You grew up in Morocco or in France?
So Both, half-half, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And you probably got in touch with surfing there then already?
When I was a teenager in Morocco, I was living close to the beach in the Atlantic Ocean. But at the time, surf felt like an expensive leisure, you know, just buying a board and everything. But we were practicing bodyboarding.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay. Because it was cheaper? Or yeah. Why you did the bodyboarding?
Yeah, but bodyboarding, you just buy a board and you improvise, you know. surfing, you need more equipment. The equipment is more expensive, and there's this learning curve. You probably need lessons. Mm-hmm. So the group of friends, bodyboarding was the most straightforward thing.
But why not?
Yeah, good start. So before we actually get to your personal background in a minute, we talk about forecasting today. How did it come that you launch your own forecast app, actually? What was the background there?
Yeah, so it started when I arrived here in Fuerteventura. At the time, we had Magic Seaweeds as a mainstream surf forecasting app.
This was pretty much everyone grew up with, probably, before it got a little bit, it's not that popular anymore, I think, no.
Oh, they closed.
Yeah, they closed.
Yeah, it's closed. Yeah, they did it like with a payroll at first, I think, and then it closed.
Yeah, Surfline like bought them and they just closed it a few years later. So yeah, there was Magic Seaweed. Their interface was okay-ish, but their forecast for the Canary Islands was really not reliable at all. Mm-hmm. Whether it's about wind or waves, they tell you some information which was very disconnected from the reality. And the other apps were not so good either, like surfforecast.com was so-so, and we had WindGuru, which has very good data for the wind, but...
You don't like surfforecast.com?
No, not at all.
Okay, yeah, crazy.
If you're in Western Europe, if you're in mainland Spain or in Portugal, they have better, more accurate data from their data provider. But in the Canary Islands, they have a low resolution. So here in north of Fuerteventura, we have the island of Lanzarote, which blocks some of the swells depending on the direction, and they are not capable of seeing this, for example. So you cannot rely on what they tell you.
Okay, because this is the app I'm using most of the popular apps, because I think it's the best, or yeah, the one with the most information.
Have you tried WindGuru?
Yeah, for sure. Especially in north, I try WindGuru in Belgium, Netherlands, or Denmark. It's pretty good, but I think Windy is a bit better. But
yeah, I guess it all depends on where you are, in which countries they have more or less accurate predictions.
Would you say that the Canary Islands, or especially Fuerteventura maybe, is the most difficult point to forecast in your experience, or are there other spots that are even harder?
No, it's probably not the most difficult. It's just for the EU countries, it's outside of the zone where they cover. So you have EWAM, European Waves. I don't remember. Maybe weather atmospheric model or something like this. There's a rectangle covering the whole Europe. Mm-hmm. They have Madeira, they have Azores Islands, but Fuerteventura is just outside of this zone. And so that's an area where they cover the whole Europe at a very high resolution for the weather forecast. And here in the Canaries, we're out of this, so they provide very low resolution forecast. Hey, it's very approximate. But I guess some areas in the world are more complicated. I went in the Caribbean years ago. The data was totally unreliable as well. The rest of the world, I'm not sure.
All right. I think we get right into that at one point. I just think about, Fabi, what would you say? Do we start with personal background or rather with the main topic, forecasting? What do you prefer for the beginning?
Let's start with the personal background and do the nerd stuff at the end.
Right. Then I suggest we start with our bullet word round. We drop you some words and you just say what you think about it, what comes into your mind.
Yes, let's do this.
Ja, was sagt man dazu?
And I start with this, like you already mentioned something about is the first bullet word is island feeling.
Island feeling. Yeah, for me it goes with peace of mind, retreat, quality of life, getting away from the urban rhythm and from the stress of more crowded places.
Oh, that's a good answer. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was twice on Fuerteventura already, and if I just forget about the thing that the island is a little bit too brown and not green enough for me, like because I'm a forest guy in Germany. It was an awesome feeling there. Like on this island, you forget about everything, and sometimes I even think, you forget about all this shit in the world. When you live on an island, you don't have to care about it that much.
Good.
So I think I dropped the next word. My word is localism on Fuerteventura.
Big, big topic, localism. Yes, there is localism. There is bad localism. I think it's important to make the difference between locals and localism. You have a lot of locals. You have a lot of very friendly locals. And the localist in sense of the aggressive person who doesn't want to share the wave, who doesn't want foreigners or non-locals to surf on the spot, and these violent people, they are a minority. They are more visible than the others because they are loud and annoying and problematic. But we really have to keep in mind there's a lot of locals who don't mind at all that tourists come and surf in the same spot as them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe I'll just keep it short, or if you want longer.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Like some people talk and talk and talk, and it's also quite nice if we may have someone that keeps it a little bit shorter. Definitely.
Yeah. So we can talk about our during hours, you know, about localism and subjects like this.
My next word is already a little bit about forecasts. A 5-star forecast for the day.
Very good. I think there are two questions or two informations we have as forecast users, as surfers, to get from the forecast. Number one is it surfable today? And the number two is how good is the surf compared to some optimal conditions and relatively to your level. So 5-star forecasts, I think it has to be a very personal appreciation because you have your own level, you have your own capabilities. So some situations can be okay for one person, but too dangerous for another. Mm-hmm. Then you have your preferences. Some people want very steep, very fast waves. Some people want a more mellow wave and gentle. Some people want big size. And I think, yeah, that's one of the core of our activity for us providers of surf forecast is how do we define, how do we qualify the conditions for our users?
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps we should customize for each of our users depending on their profile.
I have one question. I always thought that on Magic Seaweed, a 5-star forecast was when the swell was in one direction and the wind was in the other direction. So, but sometimes the swell was, how to say, the swell was offshore and the wind was onshore, and then it was a 5-star forecast.
Oh,
you think
surprising.
It could be like that? That the 5-star is when the swell and the wind direction against each other?
So ideally, you want the swell to reach the spot where you are. So the angle between the swell direction and where the beach is facing should be kind of opposite. Or, I mean, the wave sometimes can arrive from the side, and if it's powerful enough, it will wrap around and reach your spot. And for the wave, yeah, you need some size and some power, but maybe not too much. And for the wind, it's the opposite. For the wind, you want it ideally offshore, so going from the land towards the sea. And same, not too strong. If there's no wind at all, even or almost no wind speed, and it's onshore, then I can understand that Magic Seaweed can give a 5-star rating. Like if the wind is really very low in speed, then it won't bother much for the swell quality.
I had lots of situations with Magic Seaweed, which mm-hmm. With weird 5-star conditions. So, like sideshore wind and swell from the side. So I always thought, what the fuck, what's that?
But many people just relied on this. They're like, oh, 5 stars, I go there. What happened here? And a nice bullet word for this, I think.
So my next bullet word is first wave.
First wave? I'm not sure how to interpret. If it's about the first wave I surfed or anyone surfs, maybe? I think for most people, even if you don't manage to take off, to stand up, just to have the feeling to slide and be pushed by the water can be already so exciting. And it's maybe the first taste of surfing and already starting to bring the addiction and the passion about the sport.
Yeah, and what was your first wave, or what was the feeling on your first wave?
Do you still have it on your mind today?
Yes. So actually, the first time I surfed, I don't really count it like first time of surfing, because it was in Belgium in the North Sea, and the conditions were really not so good. And I was on myself, like a friend gave me her board and explained, oh, you take the white water and try to take off. And she explained me briefly, but yeah, I tried a bit. It didn't really work, and I was kind of on my own. So for me, that doesn't count. But then a few years later, I was in Morocco, in Tarazout, on holidays. Mm-hmm. And there I was like, okay, let's start to surf properly. I took some classes. And yeah, it was love at the first paddle. Definitely, like, struggling a bit. But it was funny also because my instructor was a goofy. And I'm a regular, but I didn't know. And he didn't pay attention. So I did the same movement as him. And the first half day, I learned to stand up as a goofy.
Great.
Then I had to relearn when I realized, oh, it's a bit weird, it's a bit off. I think I'm a
regular. which spot was it in Tarazout?
I guess it was in the Bay of Tarazout. Yeah.
Ah, the panorama, the main beach there. Yeah, just for starting.
Whitewash in the beach there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but funny if you just change. So you can swap goofy or regular today. Or didn't carry on with this, like learning both at the same time.
I had this in snowboarding. A long time in snowboarding, I didn't know if I'm goofy or regular, because I managed both sides pretty good. That was insane.
Good for you. And did you continue to switch and use both sides? Or
I still ride both sides.
Great. Good for you.
So last bullet word for you. A little bit more about Fuerteventura. It's the same one I actually dropped your friend Mauro already. sunburn.
We're in the south. People don't always realize. At the same height of south of Morocco, UV index is really high. Important to keep your skin protected, hydrated. There are some conspiracy theories that sunscreen is toxic and gives cancer. I know there have been cases where some sunscreen products had actually dangerous components in them, but they were removed from market. And my take is that it's definitely safer to wear sunscreen and avoid getting sunburned.
I think on Fuerte you see a lot of sunburned people, like with all the wind, and like it never feels that much. So
true.
Land of the crabs.
Yeah. Yeah, short break before you find out why you should definitely use GonnaSurf for your next surf trip to Fuerteventura or the Canary Islands instead of the other most common apps. The bullet word sunburn brings me to one of our podcast partners that I would like to introduce you to today here. If you are looking for a very good sunscreen for surfing, then check out It's on Zinc. It's a very sustainable zinc paste you put on your face, cover up the parts of your body that are burning in the sun first, or even cover the whole face. It's produced by Mitch and his wife Melinda from Graz in Austria, and we can just highly recommend it here in the podcast. Besides the fact that it's a really good product for your skin, so it rather vitalizes your skin than do some stuff than like poisoning or whatever other cosmetic products do. It's also a product that can help when you have, for example, a reef cut or a fin cut or whatever. Put some of Mitch's It's on Zinc on there and the wound is healing faster. You find the link on It's on Zinc in the show notes. In case you're interested in, you also find our 10% discount code SURFPODCAST. Type it in. Saved 10% on your order and also help us here in the podcast with a proposition that we receive. Thanks therefore. Special thanks, of course, again to Markus from Freaks of Fashion in Hamburg. He's responsible for the design of the podcast and in this position also for the title illustration today. Thanks, Markus, for all the nice pictures in the last years. Check out freaksoffashion.com or his Instagram account to find some nice and funny surf illustrations for all purpose.
Werbung Ende.
No, we want to get a little bit deeper into the main topic. And I thought about before we started, before we met, how to get the best of this episode for our listeners. And I think I leave you two guys, because you need to know Fabi is my surf nerd here. Like, I started the podcast like over 4 years ago, but I'm more the lifestyle dude that talks about how nice it is to to let surfing in your life. And Fabi came later with a skateboard background, and he's an absolute surf nerd. So I thought I leave you guys firstly go through the forecast things, and maybe you start with mentioning the most important figures and numbers, and maybe the how to use them in combination to find the right place to go.
Yes. So I think depending on your level, you need different information, different data. And when you're a total beginner, you don't know what you need to look for. So that's a tricky part. Most important thing is to know whether it's safe to surf. So there's a limit for your level of conditions where it's too big, too powerful, too much current, and you should not go in the water. You know, you need to find this limit. When you're a beginner, the easy measure is the wave height, because you have a measure in feet or meters and you know how much it is compared to a height. That's easy to interpret. It doesn't tell the whole story, but that's the measure usually people start with when they read the surf forecast. Is the wave half a meter, 2 meters, 3 meters, 1 meter? And that's a great starting point. And for a beginner, Personally, I think you don't really need optimal conditions. You need to have some waves, not too much of a storm, not too dangerous, you know. But you're generally staying inside, closer to the beach. You catch the white water. So as long as it's not flat, you'll have the occasion to try to catch waves, to practice, to learn how to stand up.
I think even if you go to the start the green wave, like perfect conditions are more like a boundary, like than a pleasure for a beginner, because it's like a steep offshore wave is not what you really want to start with.
You just want the longboard waves.
Indeed. Then when you become intermediate, you might start to prefer to get better wave quality, better conditions, optimal conditions. Personally, I think it's still worth going to surf in any conditions as long as there are waves and they are not too dangerous to pick. So ideally, you want clean waves. This means what we call ground swell. So waves that have been formed very far in the ocean. And when they reach your spot, your beach, they are very straight, very regular. You see very long lines. So this means generally when they break, you can have a very long ride to the left or to the right, depending on your spot and how it behaves. And so these waves, they have more power, more speed also. So this is where the other measures for the swell in the surf forecast come in play. So in addition to the wave height, you have the period in seconds. The period is the time between two waves in a set of waves. It's the average time. When the period is short, it means that these waves are formed not too far from here by the wind. Generally, they are very messy, very peaky. So you have a peak here, a peak there, a peak there. And it will break all at once, or you won't have a very long shoulder.
And often less powerful, I think.
Yes. They push way less. They're way less powerful.
Yes.
When the period gets bigger, generally above 8 seconds, it starts to be a ground swell rather than a wind swell, and the waves are more established, more clean. Then the wind also comes to play. So the wind, ideally you want an offshore wind, so wind coming from the land, going in direction of the ocean. So this wind is really cleaning up the face of the wave, and it's like dissolving all the small shops, all the super small wavelets, you know. So it gives you a cleaner wave to surf. When the wind is onshore, it's the opposite. It's creating some small waves. It makes the conditions very choppy, so that's not ideal, that's not optimal. Then you have other wind directions on the side, cross shore, a bit more somewhere between cross and onshore, we call it cross on, or between cross shore and offshore, it's cross offshore. So this gives you a gradient of a messiness or cleanliness of the conditions. Again, really, offshore is an ideal, or when you have no wind at all, also it's perfect. But you can find good waves to surf and very good opportunities to practice when it's choppy, when it's messy with strong onshore wind. Many people will say, oh, it's too windy, I won't surf, so it's less crowded. Yes, most of the time you won't have long ride, long clean faces, but generally you can do a takeoff, do one or two turns, you know. It's a very good practice.
But you often have a lot of current when it's onshore.
Yes. So you have to know how to deal with currents for sure. Yeah. And for me, when I was progressing, I lacked the onshore days, the messy days, because I was scared of the steep waves and the messy days. I could catch the big waves and they were less steep, less intimidating, and this got me into the practice to catch these waves and gain more confidence.
That's a good point, because I didn't have the chance to use your app to forecast already, because I just got to know it after I left Fuerteventura. But I of course I had a look on it, and it's interesting that you mentioned already the part like I asked the 5-star the 5 stars on Magic Seaweed or whatever, and you said like it's like a little bit personal for everyone, it differs. And I saw on your forecast app that you actually do like you state the figures, but you also give like some words about it, like how is it today and what is the condition, and you really explain how it looks like. And there I think it's pretty special.
Yes, so first I only had the figures, the numbers, and I had this color coded, so it was not stars, but it was a red, orange, then yellow, then green. I have 5 different colors to say how good and how bad it was. And then at some point, because I talk to a lot of people and a lot of beginners, they tell me, I don't know how to interpret all of this data. I try to make it user-friendly, but some people, I understand, for them it's still complicated to learn how to read this. So then I added this narrative form, so gonna surf under the technical presentation of the condition. You have sentences in plain English that tell you, okay, today surf conditions are not so good. Expect knee-high wave with fairly strong cross on wind. I'm reading you what's the conditions for today, actually. The swell is stable the whole day, etc. So, yeah, I think for some people, just reading a simple sentence explained in simple terms can be very useful.
Yeah, personally, I hate the stars and also the colors. I think the perfect condition depends on the level, like you said, and what you're searching. Sometimes there are perfect longboard conditions, for example, and I love to surf longboards, and on Magic Seaweed it is like 1 star, and for me it is 5 stars. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you do this on your app? Do you actually write this yourself? Having a look on it, or is it like already like an AI based thing?
Oh, I programmed everything myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I take the raw data, the forecast data from the Spanish weather agency, because I found that they have actually very precise data for the Canary Islands.
Yeah, but I mean now the evaluating it and like writing about the conditions a little bit, what I've seen, is this already like taken from somewhere, or do you do it yourself?
No, I automated it, but I created a program that will interpret. So depending on the wave height, it would tell you if it's head high, double overhead, or whatever, ankle high, etc. And for the wind speed also, it will say low wind, strong wind, very strong wind, etc. And then there's this text, whether it's good, average, not so good, great. And for this, I have a lot of calculations and interpretations. So I check the swell conditions and I give them a score. So no wave at all will give a score of 0. Small wave, medium wave will get some points. And then after some size, when it gets really big, the score for the waves will be lower because most likely it's too big for most of the surface. Then I do the same with the wind, depending on the direction and the speed. I give a score. Then I have a logic to combine both scores together. And also I compare it with the angle where each spot is facing. So the idea is that it's really from my own experience. If I have very good wave and very bad winds, it's not so good. But if the swell has a certain power, then it counteracts the effect of the bad strong offshore wind. So the score is not so bad. So there's a whole logic like this, for example.
Yeah, I understand. And because of all these things, my favorite number in every forecast is the power, the joule. Do Do you also mention the joules?
Yes. So I have the swell power. I don't measure it in joules. I have it in kilowatts.
Okay, but yeah.
By default, I created a simplified scale that goes from 0 to 5. I find the scale from 0 to 5 okay-ish, but not so useful. And I got used to the kilowatts. I chose the kilowatts rather than joules because they are easier to interpret. The joules, let's say they go between 0 and 4,000. And the kilowatts for the same power, they are between 0 and 100. So for both units, you need to get used to what they mean. But I find it easier to remember what it means, a power of 25 kilowatts than 450 kilojoules, you know?
So yeah, I understand.
Generally, it's between 0 and 100. And my problem is that this measure in kilowatts, it's very useful for me. I love it. Like, I only look at this and I know what board to take and where to go. It's useful for my friends around me, to which I've explained how it works. But most of the advanced surfers who look at the power, they are used to kilojoules. And so they don't understand it.
Yeah, it's difficult. I know how to understand it because I'm really nerd into physics and I know how to make joules into kilowatts. But yeah, most of the forecasts are using joules, I think. Or
Yes. And maybe to explain to the people who don't know what we're talking about, the swell power, it's a measure which describes how pushy the waves are. And it's actually combining the height and the swell period in seconds into just one measure. So when you have low power, it means the waves won't be very strong. And when we have high power, the waves will be much more pushy. You'll have a very strong wipeout. And sometimes for the same wave height, for a 1 meter wave, sometimes it happens to you, you think, okay, it's a 1 meter wave condition, it will be easy. And some days are easy, and some days you get big wipeouts, and some days, same height again, and you paddle, and the wave doesn't break.
Yeah.
And the explanation is that they don't have the same power. These waves don't come from the same storm, and some are really strong, some are not. So the swell power measure is great indicator. It's summarizing this picture for you.
I never had this swell power on my focus in earlier days, and I had this so often that I either didn't catch a wave because it was not strong enough, and in the next session I was just I won't wipe out us with the next because it was that powerful that what was happening here now? Like, it's not that high, but.
Yeah, I personally almost look only on the period and on the power. I think that's the most important indicators because big period is a lots of power and lots of power is lots of power. So I think that's way more important than the wave high. Because the size of the wave depends on the spot, depends on the reef, depends on the sandbank, depends on so much things. But the power and the period is the thing who hits this reef, I think.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you mentioned this, that people used your app and said I don't get it. I'm not happy with this and I don't understand this. It's like something that I fear a little bit. We are going to raise a bigger community and having a WhatsApp group by now with people, and we want to extend this in a community website that I want to build with WordPress. And I already think I have so many things on my mind now that I want to implement, and this has to look like this and this has to work like this. And I think by the end, no one gets it and I have to do everything new again.
Yeah, I think you really have to take an iterative iterative process. So you release one first version, and then you work on it to improve and improve and improve to find the right formula.
On which version you are at the moment of your app?
Technically, it's called version 10.2, but I've done more than 100, maybe 150 different releases, sometimes big improvements, sometimes very small ones since 4 years. Yeah.
Great, yeah. Crazy.
Brings me to the point, what is actually your professional background? Is it already your income, the surf app, or what are you doing for life?
No, I don't. I barely have any income from this at all. My background is in data analysis.
Ah, yeah.
So I was mostly working and consulting for big companies in my previous life. Mm-hmm. And now I'm doing still a bit of consulting on the side and working on Gonna Surf. I made it totally free from the beginning, accepting donations, but barely anyone donates.
I know this. This is podcast here. Yeah.
Then last year I started to accept sponsorships, but it's very difficult to convince a surf school here or a shop to sponsor the website. Even if I have visitors and traffic, they don't want to spend money, so it's not working either. So yeah, I'm considering to add a premium version, a pro version, and we'll see if I can, because I spent thousands of hours in there. We'll see how it evolves.
Yeah, great. This is commitment, eh? What does a premium version offers? Make some adverts for your pro version.
Yes. So at the moment, you have only 3 days of forecast because that's what the Spanish weather agency provides. And with the premium version, you'll have 14 days. I'm adding a secondary swell, extra measures like the water temperature, and extra maybe guides for Fuerteventura with specific information and specific recommendations on which spot to go depending really on today's conditions.
Right, okay. Well, that's pretty useful, I think, like especially if you're not that much into it like Fabi.
And at the moment you're not have the secondary swells in your app, or are they in the data? Sorry.
So now I have the primary swell, so it's the group of waves which are the most powerful. I have the wind swell, so the smaller swell generated locally by the local winds, and I have another measure called the total waves, which is kind of a combination of all the swells together. But it's not the same as a secondary swell.
Okay, I understand. And Benny's understanding nothing.
No, I do. I speak English. No, I'm not. I from the beginning of my surfing career, I was like still in, like I was enjoying the theoretically lessons in surf school, and I had always a look on the period and the wind, but like I got a little bit too less into depths. I think I could have done more, and it probably had helped a lot. But yeah, I still like to know what to do there, like from the beginning. So, but one thing that Lina also dropped me and recommended you to me is that you have a lot of background where all these figures actually come from, the thing in the sea that always collects all these data, how it works. Could you explain a little bit about this?
So you mean about where the raw data comes from?
Yeah, well, like the swell period and what, like, who gives these numbers?
Yes, so mostly you have, for the waves, at least you have two measurement sources. So you have buoys in the ocean. So it's floating devices that go up and down with the waves, and they measure the movements of the ocean. So they are spread around, mostly near the coasts. Mm-hmm. And these transmit data about all the swells that exist. So the direction they hide their period, it's measured at this level. So it's really in the water. And then there's satellite information, which is also used. Mm-hmm. And the weather agencies combine these. They make calculations also depending on the wind and the air pressure, the atmospheric pressure. I think I'm not an oceanographer and or a meteorologist, but they combine all this input information to evaluate where the waves are, where they are going, how fast they are moving across the ocean. Mm-hmm. To provide this forecast. So generally, the next 48 hours, you really have high accuracy, high precision. And then for the rest, for the next days, we have less certainty for the forecast. Here in the Canary Islands, we know when there's a big storm offshore Canada, we know, okay, we'll have very good swell in about a week. Takes maybe 5 days to cross the whole Atlantic. Or for the local storms, we really need the storm to happen 1 or 2 days before us, generally a bit further north or northeast of our islands. And so it's only 1 or 2 days in advance that we know when these smaller swells will reach us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, so it's also used for a lot of other things than for surfing, I guess, these information.
yeah. Actually, it's good that you bring this because the purpose of this measure initially, it's for boats, it's for marine navigation because the boats need to know if it's safe or not to cross the ocean. Mm-hmm. And the measures were designed for this in mind. That's why they are only at the hourly granularity. So you have one measure per hour. So you don't know the number of waves you'll have or the number of sets you will have within an hour. And the swell period is very important. I've been explained by a sailor because with some swell periods, it will make your boat very shaky if the waves hit, you know? Mm-hmm. So they have to adjust their direction depending on this, not to hit all the way or be hit by the waves every 8 seconds or so. And it's a bit of a dream for me. But I think we're not doing the surf forecasting right, or we're not measuring the ocean right, because technically, we could have the measure of all individual waves and we could predict all the sets that arrive. You could be sitting on the spot and know, okay, there will be a set with 4 waves and in 2 minutes, and then in 5 minutes there will be one with 6 different waves and they will be bigger, so I need to paddle out, you know. We don't have this at all right now. I don't know if some scientists are working on that, but technically, why not, you know?
Well, it would be so crazy.
We have measured these waves precisely 5 kilometers away offshore. We know they are coming to us. So instead of having an hourly average that the waves are from this direction, we could have the individual count of all the waves that are coming.
This is crazy. Like
I'm out loud now.
Imagine this, yeah. And we just like we are on a podcast marathon today, so we're 15 minutes before you got into our impact zone studio here, and we had another guest and we talked about surf history. Like he was establishing a surf camp in northern Spain 25 years ago, and we talked about like how the lifestyle of surfing changed and that everything got so professional. And now imagine if you sit in a lineup and looking at your smartwatch, like there's coming a set in 5 minutes with 4 waves like that high. Okay, no, don't take this set, leave this.
Oh, that would be so horrible because we need the clean up sets to bring the cooks out to the beach. So
this would still happen.
Oh, great, yeah. But it's it's cool. Like your app is really for the Canary Islands, very precise. Then, like you mentioned already, like Lanzarote is on like sometimes a boundary for the waves, and like so you can do this a lot more precise for the Canary Islands. Do you already think about forecasting other regions too, or do you stay with your area?
Yes, so I started only with Fuerteventura, and for me it was kind of an experiment, because I live here, I can easily assess how good or how bad the website or the predictions are for the conditions, so it was easy to validate this. So for the first 3 years, it was only Fuerteventura, and this year I launched Lanzarote, Gran Canaria. Now I'm working on Tenerife. And that's the four islands which are actually surfable in the Canaries. So the next steps, yeah, is to launch. For me, it's easy to continue to work with Spain because it's the same data provider. So next year, probably, if I decide to spend more time on the project, I'll add the north of Spain and the rest of Spain, and then Portugal, rest of Europe, rest of the world, but step by step.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I have this dilemma actually, because I don't like to bullshit. I like to provide accurate information and data. So I'm really going slowly and checking the spots myself before adding them, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's a slow process. And in the past months, I've discovered a lot of new forecast websites or forecast. They cover the whole world, but they just are generated with AI with extracted data automatically from anywhere else. And they are not totally wrong, but they are not totally right. And, you know, the AI generated description of spots and how they behave and whether they are good for beginners or not. Mm-hmm. Can be very misleading sometimes, but I'm a bit kind of jealous because I'm progressing so slowly, and these guys just with a clap of the hand and the AI tool, they cover the whole world. So I'm wondering, oh, should I reconsider my approach? I think I'll stick to quality rather than quantity, though.
We like quality.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, it's funny, like usually that's the part that that Fabi comes with, but looking on you, like talking about the figures and the accuracy of forecast, like your eyes are shining, like you have the big pleasure for surfing and for numbers and for like this is really cool.
Yeah, it's a passion project.
Yep. The funny thing, it's my passion too, but I combine this with lots of apps. For me, it would be way easier to have a app or a website like you, and to combine all my, I think information is the wrong word, all my experiences.
What Fabi does, and what I also heard about other apps that came into my bubble, Fabi does like monitoring a little bit, you know, like spots, like writes down what happened on these conditions and how it was there, and like to get some idea to go to which place at what conditions, and. Like 3 years ago or whatever, like pretty much in the starting time of this podcast, I started like some kind of forecast app from a German couple that went to California, and I was in touch with them for a podcast interview, but I think they broke up or whatever and didn't hear from them again, like Booyoo app or something like and it was a surf log. Do you think about implementing something like this, like a personal logbook where you can write down what conditions and which spot was for you the ideal?
It's on my to-do list. It's a very low priority for me. Mm-hmm. So I have many other features I think are more interesting, relevant, important. I think journaling is a great practice. So to learn as a surfer, to progress, you take notes after every session about how the waves were, what was, whether they were good or not for you, what was difficult, what was easy in these conditions. I think we're not many with a discipline to actually maintain this this journal, you know. I once downloaded an app with this. I started to use it and I was like, oh no, I don't want to type. I don't want to write.
I feel it.
It would be nice to have, but need very some motivation to do that.
When I had a great session, it's more like, oh, now I'm getting a beer. and we'll move on to the next session or whatever, but forget about the lock.
Yeah, I always write it in my Google Maps. I do pins on every spot with the description. So my Google Maps is pretty much overloaded, but many of my friends ask me about my spot guide. I call it spot guide. Yeah,
That's great. Cool. Do you publish this pin, these custom maps, or
To my friends, because there are lots of spots I discovered on my own, or secret spots some locals told me or showed me, and I always thought about publish them the maps, but I think that's not the right thing to share the secret spots.
Yeah, of course.
And to share my information, because it was hard work to get this information. So it's lots of time and lots of money to travel to all those spots. So I think I want to serve those spots on my own.
Yeah. Maybe, Fabi and me, we never talked about it, but maybe as long as our community is not too big, maybe that may be some kind of privilege of community members that they may ask Fabi for some information. I don't know. We never talked about it, but we can discuss about this later, Fabi.
Yeah, I think that would be possible in a... without some spots. I have to to make a new map with all my favorite spots.
but another cool point about your website, about your app, is like you offer a lot of information about spots there. You have really like an explanation about a lot of spots on Fuerteventura, and you give some information about, like, you even have some things like surf etiquette or technical training points that you can take with you when you visit the website, the app, no? Like a pretty good thing as long as you focus on Fuerteventura or on the Canary Islands.
Yes. There are two things. One thing is the spot guides. So I only put well-known spots, mostly spots for beginners and intermediates, in there. And I explain visually. So I have this aerial photography. I explain visually how they work. So mostly the dangers, where you enter and exit, where are the rocks, where are the currents, some tips about the conditions that are good for each spot, which level are suitable for the spots. So that's very useful, I think, for the people who come to the island and don't know yet where to surf. I have a few articles explaining where to surf. And then there's a whole other part. It's called Surf Better. It's a knowledge base, some articles about etiquette, about safety, how to deal with the crowds, etc. I find it very important. I see many beginners, early intermediates who have issues, self-confidence, don't know how to behave in the water, don't know the rules. They make mistakes and they are frustrated. Thing is, these articles, they didn't gather too much visibility. People don't read too much. So I'm not sure of how much time I should continue dedicating on this. But there's a lot also of YouTube channels or websites dedicated to surf education.
Yeah. But it's a good thing that you just put it in there, like even if it's like 5% going through it, you maybe did like improvement for 5%. That's already something. I like it. I think first of all, technical things. Fabi, do you have things that you think that are missing or other questions about data and stuff?
I have one more question because it's, for me, a pretty important tool which almost no app or website has. And it's a tool to add pictures of the spot from surfers. You thinking about something like that? Because I always like to see some impressions from all the guys and all different angles of the spot.
Yes, actually, that's something Magic Seaweed used to have in the past.
I remember, yeah. Mm.
And now Surfline, which replaces Magic Seaweed, hasn't put this feature in place, I think. That's something I would be very interested to add in Gonna Surf. I'm working right now on publishing my own videos of the spots. And my concern for allowing people to post images is that then I need moderation. I need to spend some time to validate that people actually post photos and that the photos are actually of the spot, you know?
Yeah.
So that would be a bit time consuming. So maybe I need to activate the community around me and get some contributors to help me with this. But it's definitely valuable indeed to have photos of one given spot in low tide, in high tide, with big waves, with small waves, etc. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I love this feature and I'm missing it a lot.
I think so too, yeah. I remember. And yeah. Brings me to some last personal questions, because you already mentioned you have lots of people around you, like Fuerteventura is a surf crazy island. It's pretty much one of the biggest things there, I think, like in tourism, surfing is so big and so many people are enthusiasts. How do you feel yourself considered by now, like as a foreigner that moved there? Are you part of the local surfing scene, or do you still feel a little bit more not accepted? Or
it's a good question. I'm not sure of how to answer this. At the beginning of the project, I had some mostly positive reception. But I received a few very angry comments that a forecast website for Fuerteventura would bring even more tourists and even more crowds.
Yeah.
And it turned out these people, it's three different people, I think three or four. And the three or four of them are actually making money from surf tourism. So some are owners of surf schools, some are surf instructors. So they are very friendly with their clients who are beginner surfers from abroad. But individually, they, on their back, they think it's too crowded and foreigners should not come here, you know. So it was quite hypocritical. And apart from these few negative comments, I think some people also understood that it's also in their favor to have a local website, because I only put public, well-known surf spots and I don't put the local spot, the very advanced spot and the secret spots in my website. And some other mainstream forecast app have some of these. And the population here is very diverse, because you have local, actually Canarian surfers. You have Spaniards from mainland Spain, a lot from Catalonia. You have many Germans, many Italians, many people from the whole Europe. Many of them come only for the surf season, so in autumn, winter, and then they live in spring. And I don't know. I think some people are grateful and appreciate the site and the solution I provide for sure.
Did you meet Tim Elter, our local Umlobionik?
Yeah, I haven't talked with him. The first time I saw him was 2 years ago. You know, there's a big wave competition in Lanzarote, a yearly one. It's called Kemao Class. I didn't know Tim Elter, but I saw him out of the water with a broken board. I didn't know he was a competitor. And I was like, what's this guy doing? Why did he go in the water? Because I thought it was just a tourist, you know? And then later I saw some Instagram that, okay, he's also from Fuerteventura.
Always funny to get some background information about the celebrities in German surfing. Eh?
Maybe he's using your website.
I don't know. Maybe, yeah.
Could quite imagine.
Yeah, you also have another German pro surfer, Janina Zeitler.
She's living also there. Yeah, he's from Munich, near my home here.
She's on Fuerte too. Okay.
Yes, I mean, or she is at least a few months per year here to train, yeah?
Mm-hmm. yeah, like very international island. Like it's
the Germans are everywhere.
Yeah, but so you feel well into the in the scene, yeah? Like you feel accepted and like feel part of, or do you miss like your like Brussels maybe sometimes?
Not much, a little bit, yeah. Like some social life, missing a bit the forest, you know. But the people are very friendly here. Life is nice.
Cool. Yeah, I asked because Fabi and me, we both went to Brussels like shortly. Like, and we both thought like a great city. It's like a cool place, but like it's that busy. And I think it's completely different. Like on Fuerteventura, you do a different life than in Brussels.
Yeah. Fun fact: here in Fuerteventura, we have a few WhatsApp groups and WhatsApp communities of surfers. Mm-hmm. And in Belgium, they have one also. It's called surfreport.be. And I joined it because a friend put me in there. And I'm so impressed because they are much more active than us. In our WhatsApp groups, there is 1-2 messages per day of people asking if there are waves, but not much activity, you know? Mm. And in Belgium, they don't really have waves and surf. I mean, it's barely ever surfable. But every day there's 10, 20 messages. The people are much more engaged. Maybe it's because they don't surf. I don't know.
Yeah, funny thing. Benny told me that you lived in Belgium. And I also know one guy from Belgium. I traveled with him a while. And he told me about this group. And he also told me that they talk about waves every damn day. It's so funny. But You can surf there pretty often, but you have to be passionate and you have to be a passionate longboarder. But there are some waves in Belgium and the Netherlands are not far away, and Scheveningen and all the known spots are pretty good there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's improving and developing all over the world. I just had a weekly talk with my boss on our actual job today, and he's a big Belgium fan. He like twice or more, like more times a year, he travels with his family to Belgium, to Oosterkerke. And he said, they just opened a surf shop last year, like even a surf school. And this was like over all the years that he went there, he thought like, maybe surfing or windsurfing. And I said, yeah, no, come on, go for it now, Frank. Well, I'm curious. He's going next week. I have to give him a text again. You go surfing, dude. Come on.
Maybe you should add Belgium on your map. So you have the Canaries and Belgium. That would be crazy.
Two opposites.
Yeah. Cool. Fun times again. Thanks so much for the information. Sure. Fabi, if there are no questions from your side open, then I would close at this point and probably meet you at Fuerte. Like, definitely going to come back because my wife is a big Fuerteventura fan. Like, he wants to move there straight away, like, and maybe tomorrow. And we even think about it. Yeah. So I definitely think we're going to meet.
Great. Yeah. Sure. You're very welcome. Yeah. Good. And maybe one last word, or I'll repeat myself for your listeners. I mean, really for the beginners or intermediates, you know, first, don't be too picky about the conditions. Like, if it's small and not totally flat, go for it. You'll have one wave every 20 minutes, maybe, but it's an occasion to practice. And some people, they say, oh, the waves are too small and too slow. Maybe the wave is slow when moving in front, but you can gain some speed by surfing to the side, or also when you go up on the lip and go down, the gravity pulls you down. So you can get some speed, and it's a great way to practice and improve. So just go for it. If it's choppy, if it's small, if it's not ideal, go for it. And learn, study. I've done quite a few sessions about how to read the surf forecast and the safety practices. And the same questions come again. It's like, oh, what do I do when it's crowded? How do I deal with the current? How do I read the waves? And there's so many resources free on the internet to learn this. So spend a bit of time. It's not time consuming. Sometimes if you like videos and not reading, it's on videos. You have images. So go for it. You have Surf Simply and Barefoot Surf. They're on Instagram and YouTube. It's free resource education with a lot of topics. So study a bit, and it's going to make your surf much more fun, and give you more confidence.
Yeah.
Thank you for your words.
Thanks, Alfred. Yeah. Education is never wrong. Just the opposite. It's always important, whatever you do. If it's about surfing, if it's about my favorite bullet point in this, politics. Be educated and you do better decisions. Cheers, Mehdi, and see you then.
Thanks very much. Yeah, have a nice evening. Bye-bye.
All right, loads of information so far, but as announced, this is not enough for us. I ask Mehdi later on for some more details about the differences between the surf forecast apps and the sources where they get their data from in the different countries and areas. And this we did via WhatsApp. Our dialogue follows now. I asked Mehdi first why there are actually big differences between the preciseness of the surf forecasts in different areas. So why are the data that Gonna Surf receives for the Canary Islands are more precise in the Canary Islands than, for example, Surfline or surfpodcast.com data are? So what source they are actually going to receive data from? Why is one source more precise in France and the other more precise in Spain, or even specifies on the Canary Islands? And isn't it possible to combine all these data in one app, or use the one source for the one country and the other source for the other country in one app?
Yeah, so you have some global data providers, like in the US weather agency NOAA, they publish global weather forecasts. Or here in Europe, there's a transnational agency called ECMWF, the European Center for Medium Range Weather Forecasts, which also publish global forecast data. Then each country has their own weather agency, which computes their own forecasts nationally and sometimes globally. So generally, the country's weather forecast will be fine-tuned for the local geography of the country, and will be higher resolution for the country. So if you look at Germany, you have DVD, and they have three models. They call Icon Global, Icon Global
covers the whole globe, the whole world, at a resolution, a precision of 13 kilometers. So every 13 kilometers, they give you a different forecast, a different value. Then around Europe, they have another model, more precise. They call Icon Europe, with a resolution of 7 kilometers. And then just to cover Germany and around Germany, they have Icon D2. And here you have a much higher precision of 2 kilometers. So their interest is to have most accurate forecasts in Germany. That's why they have this much higher precision forecast just in and around Germany. And it would be extremely costly and not feasible even with supercomputers to provide this resolution, this quality at a global level. That's why the more you go out of your zone of interest, the lower resolution you provide, because it's easier and less, so faster and less expensive to compute for computers. So for GonaSurf, I did a lot of research. I compared the forecast of everyone, and even in the Spanish Weather Agency's official website, there's not much, but I found out that the Spanish Ports Authority has very precise data. They needed to make sure that boats navigation is safe. And there they have this high resolution data. And the other providers don't have that for the Canary Islands. They have it for the rest of Europe, but not the Canary Islands. And the other surf forecast app, generally they use global providers. So NOAA from the US or the European ECMWF, they combine these, but that's medium or low resolution data, like every 13 kilometers or every 9 kilometers, they have a forecast for these zones. So it's like squares, you know, in the planet. And it's not really ideal, not enough for the spots. Like sometimes one spot has some conditions and 5 kilometers away, you don't have the same wind or you don't have the same swell. So it's really crucial. So how I decide which data to take, it's always the highest resolution data, which is the most valuable, especially for surf forecasting. And yes, when you move to different geographies, it definitely is worth integrating different data providers and taking the most accurate data provider for that region, for sure.
All right. Yes, it's interesting. So every country basically has its own and specializes on the area in the country. And they don't really, no one of these really works together and share data. So every country is on its own. And probably it's similar with the weather forecasts. And the weather forecast for Germany is precise in German apps or whatever, but in other countries you better use the local stuff then. I never thought about this, to be honest.
Yes, so to be precise, there's actually data sharing between countries, between organizations. So data shared is more the raw measurement of various conditions. So in the sea, we have buoys that measure the swell. You have stations that measure the wind a bit all around. And actually, boats, ships, and planes, like commercial planes, they share their observation. The planes, they can tell the air pressure, the atmospheric pressure, which is used. The boats, they measure also the water temperature, which affects both the temperature, the wind patterns. So this data is shared and used by everybody, but all the agencies or countries, whether organizations, they all have their own models. So their own way of calculating, of making a forecast. So they use and share the same data, but everyone calculates his own way. And that's this calculation, which is expensive if you do it at high resolution. So German DVD might use the measurements by the French weather stations, but they won't compute high resolution for the territory of France and vice versa, basically. So yeah, that's about it.
Okay, that's exciting. So all public ships and planes actually measure data when they're on the way from X to Y, and gives these to these agencies, and this just happens. So there's no charge for this or anything.
I'm not really sure about the economics of it. Who pays who for what? And I don't know also how the proportion of ships and planes which participate to these programs. I'm not sure. But yeah, the thing is, for the weather, there's really a combination of sources. So the buoys floating in the water, the weather stations inland, the satellite data, and also this information from moving vehicles, and all of this is combined to compute forecasts according to a model, prediction model.
Shut up, stupid seagull. Stop laughing at me. I know, I know. Kelly warned me. She said,
"Oh, come on, Slater. Don't trust the 5 stars on Surfline for tomorrow morning. Gonna Surf says the wind is going to ruin the swell, and you're not going to have much fun there."
What did I say? Of course. Ah, come on, now I go. Gonna be awesome. Legendary. Woo, let's go. Right, here I am. Kelly's still sleeping. And I see a nice big mess in front of me. But, yeah, who cares? I'm gonna get in there, score some good rides. Kelly gonna be jealous if I'm back.
No, I'm not, laying in my cozy warm bed.
What was this? I gonna get in, guys. See you later. Hooray, right there, rock and roll.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.
Dieser Podcast wird vermarktet durch die Podcastbude.